or presumed rural and over 7,000 non-rural unless they display rural characteristics such as isolation. Towns like Nome, with populations in between those numbers, are labeled according to their degree of rural qualities, the main one being a heavy reliance on subsistence. Access to subsistence is the motivation driving towns to maintain their rural statuses. Only rural residents are permitted to hunt and fish on federal public lands. Non-rural residents lose that privilege. Nome is considered rural and is in no danger of losing that status. Nevertheless, Nomeites provided the following changes to the state's determination guidelines. First, communities off the road system should be graded rural, but communities on the road system should be categorized by their extent of rural traits. Second, the rural determination review, which is conducted every 10 years with the census, should instead be performed only when needed. Third, the population threshold should be increased to 20,000. And finally, a high cost of living should be listed as a rural characteristic. Tim Smith, vice chairman of the Seward Peninsula Federal Subsistence Advisory Council, says these suggestions are intended to liberalize the state's rural requirements and maximize the subsistence program.
Our primary concern is we know that in all communities in Alaska, there are people who are legitimate subsistence hunters and fishermen, and we didn't want to see them excluded from eligibility to be federal subsistence hunters and fishermen too easily. And we wanted to keep people in the program as long as possible.
Carl Johnson, Council Coordination Division Chief for the Office of Subsistence Management, led the sessions. He says through this input process, the Federal Subsistence Board is not making any decisions on which communities are rural or non-rural. The board is only collecting assessment on the state's rural determination criteria. Johnson explains how you can submit your own comments on the matter.
Right now, the public comment period is open until December the 2nd. People can go to www.doi.gov/subsistence. On the main page, you'll see a rural determination link. There, you're going to see a lot of materials that will provide background. It'll provide resources that are available, and it'll provide information on how people can submit comments. So you can email to subsistence@fws.gov, or you can mail, or if you're in Anchorage, hand deliver to the Office of Subsistence Management.
The Federal Subsistence Board will be meeting in Anchorage April 15th through 17th, 2014, where a summary of all the statements will be presented. And Navajo Code Talkers were recognized more than a decade ago for their service in World War II. They used their native language as a code that the enemy was never able to crack, but until recently, no one knew the Tlinkets from Southeast Alaska also served as code talkers. They got their due Wednesday when Congress awarded a gold medal to the Tlinkit and Haida Central Council. At a congressional ceremony attended by hundreds yesterday, the Tlinkits and 32 other tribes received congressional gold medals for their service to the nation as code talkers. They worked in pairs, usually over a radio. During 48 hours on Iwo Jima, they say 800 native language battle communications were received and translated. It took seconds at a time when decoding by machine could take half an hour. House Speaker John Boehner said the men undoubtedly saved lives. Ozzie Shakely received the Congressional Gold Medal on behalf of the Central Council of Tlinkit and Haida. Five individual Tlinkit men, all deceased, were honored with civil medals. They are Jeff David, Richard Bean Sr., George Lewis, and brothers Harvey Jacobs and Mark Jacobs Sr. The Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission has revised their proposed hydraulic fracking regulations again. Some of the new rules aim to give the public more information about the chemicals used in the controversial oil and gas extraction method. However, in the latest version, companies are allowed to withhold some information from the public in order to protect their trade secrets. If the regulations are approved, companies could mark some formulas confidential, and only the AOGCC would see them. If the public wanted the information, they would have to seek a court order. Barrett Ristroff with the Wilderness Society says this weakens the provisions that protect the public.
Also, I think this is an issue of such great importance to the public that the public should know ahead of time what's going on in and around their property and the areas where they might hunt. It shouldn't have to take a court order, which can take months and even years to get that information.
Ristroff says waiting for a court order could be especially dangerous if there's a medical emergency, potentially leaked to groundwater contamination. During a hearing about the proposed regulations in October, Oil industry representatives argued that the specific chemical mixtures for fracking fluids needed to be protected so that other companies did not steal them. They argued that without protections, they would not be willing to use their best recipes in Alaska. Other changes in the regulations say that if landowners don't give the operators permission to gather baseline data on their water wells, then the companies will not have to test the water wells later for contamination. Though baseline data gathering will be required, follow-up testing will only be necessary if the commission requires it or if a landowner complains. The regulations will be discussed at a public hearing on January 15. A paper from a symposium of researchers studying ocean acidification is presenting its findings at this year's climate change conference in Warsaw, Poland. In it, scientists explain that the ocean continues to acidify at a rate that is unprecedented in Earth's history. Acidification is the result of ocean waters absorbing carbon dioxide. The report, which was prepared by three different global research groups, found that since the Industrial Revolution began in the 1700s and 1800s, acidity in seawaters has risen by 26%. Currently, the accelerating rate of acidification is faster than ever during the last 300 million years. Growing acidification is bad news for polar oceans, since it will cause seawater to become corrosive for animals with shells or calcium-based exteriors. Industries like Alaska's lucrative Red King crab fishery will be severely hampered, if not totally eradicated, if waters continue getting more acidic. And the study's laboratory testing found that some invasive organisms, like certain seagrasses, thrive in acidic conditions. Other risks cited are damage to coral reefs protecting shorelines and marine biodiversity. In human populations dependent on sea patterns, for example, subsistence hunters and commercial fishermen are likely to be adversely affected. The biggest driver of ocean acidification is CO2 emission from burning fossil fuels. At this point, the only reliably known mitigation approach is a global reduction in greenhouse gases, as well as large-scale implementation of land and resource management strategies like wetland restoration and reforestation that help absorb CO2. And a look at the price of gold in New York at this hour. Gold is up $3.80 an ounce to $1,247.60 an ounce. Silver is up 20 cents an ounce to $20.15 an ounce. Zinc is at 84 cents a pound. It is unofficially 11 degrees outside the KNOM studios, 10 minutes after 9 o'clock.